Get with that. This is the Daft on Draft podcast, and we are playing a little bit of this or that today on the podcast. We are going to pit two prospects against one another of different perceived NFL draft value. Corey and I are going to discuss in a somewhat rapid fire manner, or else we would be here for 2 hours, which prospect we would rather have at their given perceived value. I did the offensive questions here, and I based mine kind of off of the consensus board and a little bit of where I believe they will actually go. So there's a little bit of a mix there. Corey, how did you, first of all, hello, Corey Kinnon, my co-host here. I'm Dalton Miller. I don't even know if I introduced myself today. If you're listening to this, I assume you know who we are, but how did you do? Did you do kind of off consensus board or where?
Yeah, a little bit consensus, a little bit personal feeling and vibe checking it a little bit too. So a little mixture of both here. It's kind of how I went about this. So yeah, we got 10 total ones to go through. This should be a fun episode.
Yeah, we're kind of going position by position here. The only real ones here that we're not hitting are linebacker and safety, I think. So
and quarterback.
I don't even think about quarterback. Here's the thing about quarterback. If it's a guy I don't think is a starter, it doesn't matter. And then, like, if I think that he has starter potential in round six and you're pitting him up against Cam Ward, it's like, okay, I'm going to take the guy in round six who might be like, obviously, if he ends up being Dak Prescott in round four, Tom Brady in round six, like, are you kidding me? Of course. So, yeah, those are just kind of funky. Plus, it's a bad quarterback class. Anyways, let's get right into it here. And let's start off pitting a couple of teammates against one another. And that is, would you rather have Matthew Golden, wide receiver from Texas, in round one, or Isaiah Bond in round three?
It's easily Matthew Golden in round one. I mean, as much as like I kind of like Bond as a player a little bit, I mean, he disappears. He doesn't play through contact well, which I think I just got done charting Quinn Ewers as well for reception. So this is really fresh on my mind. And the amount of like tight window goal line snags that are on Matthew Golden's tape in games like Arkansas and Vanderbilt that like I didn't, you know, through first watch, I was just skimming through targets to chart, right? And then this time around, I've second time skimming through for targets and charting for accuracy. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy's making every tight window grab that you could imagine at his size. I think he's really nuanced. A really solid character guy as well, which is not to say that, you know, I too much about Isaiah Bond, but I think we've had some stuff on the podcast before. But there's some stuff there with Isaiah Bond, including checking out after an ankle injury. Some other stuff within that Texas building as well. So I just personally probably wouldn't touch Isaiah Bond at all. But I would also, even if that were the choice and Isaiah Bond, and we're just going off of tape, I would still take Matthew Golden round one over Isaiah Bond round three.
Yeah, if we're going off of tape, there's no question. I'm going with Isaiah Bond. Just because I don't think that the difference is very big when we're basing it off of tape. Now, when you bring everything into the fold, then yes, you are taking Matthew Golden in round one. And I think what it comes down to at the end of the day, Matthew Golden literally took Isaiah Bond's job. That offense puts wide receivers in not an X or a Z position, but in a position on the field. The wide receiver on the right side of that offense is getting the freaking football. Now, part of that could be the offense. Part of that could be the quarterback. but the right side of the field is split out wide is where the ball goes quite often. And Matthew Golden flat out took that job from Isaiah Bond. Now, like we've talked about before, he's not running a 4.29 on the field. That's absolutely fine. Isaiah Bond is. The problem is Isaiah Bond has to want to run that 4-2-9 when he is on the field. And he has to not have the ankle injury, not fight through the ankle injury all year, not kind of check out a little bit, not be on different pages with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff matters. So, yeah, as much as I love Isaiah Bond as the player and had him as my wide receiver one heading into the year, this ends up being Matthew Golden. My second one. Would you rather have Caleb Johnson in round two or Trevor Etienne in round four?
I really like both players, man. I really like both players.
I did try to find players that we both kind of like here.
Yeah, that's tough. This one's because tough.
Like, if you just like don't like a player, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to take that guy in round two. I don't give a shit about that guy in round five, you know?
Yeah, this is tough. I think I'm still going to go Caleb Johnson, though. Like, we're talking about a top 20 player on my board in round two versus, you know, a guy of a third round grade on and Trevor Etienne. I always get the names mixed up between him and his brother because they both start with T-R.
It's easy.
It's terrible. I think I'm still going Johnson here, man. I think there's just so much there to love with his eyes, his patience, his foot speed, what he can develop into out of the backfield as a receiver and as a pass pro, pass protector at his, in his frame. I mean, I think this is a guy that's a perennial, like 1K yard guy, at least for a half decade. Yeah, and we're talking about some durability issues with ETN as well. Like, he's missed quite a few games in his career. So I'm going to take Caleb Johnson here, round two.
From a vibe check standpoint, I think going with Caleb Johnson might be the move here. The issue is I have to look at my board and I have to look at the value on my board. Caleb Johnson in round two, he is a round two player for me. Trevor Etienne in round four, he just snuck in to the very bottom of round two for me as a player based on tape. I have to go with Trevor Etienne here. I expect Caleb Johnson to have a better NFL career. Now, here's the issue. I think that he will be okay, but we've seen guys who, and I don't know how you feel or felt about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he was a duo dominator. He was unbelievable running duo. You get him outside of duo looks and he fell apart completely. Mm-hmm. So Caleb Johnson is pretty much an outside zone guy. Like, that is what Iowa runs. And so get him out of that, get him into gap power stuff. And does he have the same type of success now? But for me, 6'1", 215 pounds, and it looks like he has enough contact balance and juice to survive that. But Trevor Etienne is also a fantastic athlete with juice, and he can provide a little bit out of the backfield. He actually probably shows a little bit more out of the backfield as a receiver, at least in the college career. So for me, round four, the value is just there for him. And that's all there is to that one. The next one really puts us in a bind.
Yeah. All right.
It is Mason Taylor in round two or Gunnar Helm in round four.
Yeah. So this one's tough because, like, I think this one's so scheme dependent. Because, like, if you're asking me, like, for the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm saying Mason Taylor. If you're telling me for a team that runs, like, the Los Angeles Rams or the Cleveland Browns or even the Steelers with Arthur Smith, if you're telling me a team that runs a lot of creative, like, run game stuff, I'm probably taking I'm taking Gunnar Helm, because Mason Taylor is not blocking for anything. And so that's what makes this really hard.
We disagree.
I'm sorry, there. Man. He can't block. He can't block.
We disagree big time there. No. You're wrong.
I'm
there.
Sticking with it. I'm sticking with it. I mean, I've been a Gunnar Helm truther. And we're talking about a two-round value difference here. I still got to stick with my gun. No pun intended. My guns here. I'm going to stick with Gunnar Helm round four here.
Okay. Listen, I respect that. I do. I am so far on the athleticism side for tight end that I just can't do it at this point.
I know, I just can't
do it at this point. if you're not a like a seven Raz, like at the end of the day, if you don't have juice, and listen, like did we get tricked by a couple of hurdles early in the year? Like I still think Gunnar Helm is going to be a good NFL tight end. Mm-hmm. The problem is we see a very high correlation between raw athleticism and success at the NFL level at tight end. He is also the son of Jason Taylor. He also has a massive amount of tape pass protecting, and he pass protects his balls off. Now he's still got to get better at it. I still think that he's sort of growing into his frame. He's still a younger player as well, a junior. I didn't love his usage in the passing attack at LSU at all, but he showed juice when he had the ball in his hands. I'm going with Mason Taylor here. And it's, again, I was talking about my board. I'm throwing my board out the window for this. This is based on me needing to understand and push what I truly believe in when it comes to this position and what we have consistently seen from this position over the years. And I just have to bet on the athleticism here.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I'm on mock draftable right now. I'm trying to find, it's taking a while to get there. Maybe actually if I start from the bottom, that'll be, oh man, they don't even have below a 31 inch vertical for tight ends. I'm trying to find a good comp for Gunnar Helm here based on vertical jump, because like his
Thaddeus Moss.
Woof. Because I don't think his 40 time is super reflective with the rolled ankle, but the vertical jump really is.
Yeah, the vertical jump is before he got hurt. Let's talk about that. If you roll your ankle, if you tweak your hammy, if you have a bruised knee, if you are feeling a little bit under the weather that day, don't freaking test. If you are Xavier Restrepo coming in at like 220 pounds, and then you go out and you run a four, why are you testing?
Yeah. Like,
I don't care if you are really hurt or if you're not. I don't care if you are fully freaking healthy. If you know you are going to test poorly, you have the times. Mm-hmm. Like, unless you are training with somebody who is lying to you about timing data when you are training, you know what you're going to run. If you know that you're a wide receiver and you're going to run a 4.65, don't freaking run. Don't do it. Yeah. If you tweak your hammy, Xavier Restrepo, I know that you're a hardo. I know that you want to do all the dirty work. Same with Gunnar Helm.
Mm-hmm.
Don't freaking test. It's just a bad look.
Yeah. So I think I might have found a decent comp here. Dwayne Allen out of Clemson, drafted by the Colts. Might be a decent one there. There's not a lot of tight ends with staying power who have a 32 inch vert even, and it doesn't go below 31 here. So, not great stuff there. But I can't quit him for whatever reason. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Man. I still think he's gonna carve out something, man. I really do. His tape is so good. His fluidity on tape, even his like functional athleticism is better than what he did at the combine. I think like he's hurdling dudes on tape. So like I'm going to stick with my Gunnar Helm stocks here. I can't do it.
I just want to say real quick, that was a shout out. That entire tight end segment was a shout out to Max Toscano, LSU alum who is not a fan of Gunnar Helm and is a fan of Mason Taylor. So here we go. Ariante Ursery in round 2 or Charles Grant in round 3.
I'm going to go Charles Grant in round 3 basically only because I think that Ariante Ursery is a round 3 player who's going to go probably top 50 because he's really athletic for his size at 330, but what kills me about Ursery and guys his size honestly with in his kind of frame is lack of knee bend and just how exposed his chest is because of the lack of knee bend at that size. to where Charles Grant, I understand that he's a fifth year senior. I understand that he hasn't gained weight very well in his entire college career, even at that age as a fifth year guy. Like he was fighting for 300 pounds playing weight wise at William and Mary, but he also was never in a big P4 nutrition program. He was never in a program that had a high caliber weight training. I think if Charles Grant would have been at Ohio State or Oregon or Alabama or a team like that, like I don't think he would have an issue being 300. And he didn't test, but he was 311 at the combine, which probably was
my boy was some fake weight.
I don't know when William Mary's pro day is, but I really hope he tests, like comes in and he tests at his pro day. I think he's still battling some injury as well because he was supposed to be at the Senior Bowl and he wasn't at the Senior Bowl either. But he's an athlete. He's got a really awesome frame, a really awesome body type. I'm going to take a shot that like he was just malnourished is the wrong word, but like there was some mispractice based on resources at William and Mary versus what he could add to his frame and become at an NFL program, plus his tools. So I'm going to take Charles Grant round three here all day over Ursary round two.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes weight is kind of based off a need. At William and Mary against that level of competition.
Fine. Yeah. Like,
the old saying is mass moves mass. And while that's kind of true, it is also kind of not true. I think that him coming in at 311 and not like 302 is a pretty good sign. Like even if it was bad weight and he's going to lose a lot of that, I do think depending on what you can do with him early, which is develop his frame for a year or two before putting him on the field, if you have to, would be perfect. Because it's, and a lot of people don't understand this, the guy is not going to go from 285 to 305 even to 300 and have most of it be muscle in a year or two. It's not possible naturally. Mm-hmm. Now we can talk about natural versus enhanced and NFL players and professional athletes in general, but not going to happen very quickly for him. So
That's what always fascinates me about the dudes who just immediately cut 100 pounds after they retire.
Yeah.
And like Joe Thomas is
that's like a completely different thing. So like with guys like Joe Thomas and guys like who was the Seattle Seahawks weird dude, real out
oh
there.
Russell Okung. King. Yeah, Russell, who had
lost
his entire like
50 pounds.
Yeah, well, he lost a lot of money too by having most of his one contract being cryptocurrency.
weird there, dude. But anyways, they like a lot of those guys. I mean, all of those guys, when you're 300 plus pounds, you have to push so much food, like, especially if you are eating healthy. Like, I don't think people really understand. People talk about bulking all the time. And now I'm getting into like the fitness and nutrition side of things here, but like people talk about bulking all the time, like it's easy. No, it's not. Try eating 4,000 calories of like potatoes, rice, and lean meat. It is so hard. It is so hard to push that amount of food. You feel full all the time. You feel sick most of the time when you are trying to keep that amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And so these guys just go to normal eating habits and eating intuitively. And then it just flies off of their frame. Anyways, I never answered the question. I'm also going with Charles Grant in round three. And it's mostly because of the technical side of things now and having to rely on somebody like Arionte Ursary earlier in his career than you would somebody like Charles Grant. You can draft and develop and stash Charles Grant. You don't really have that luxury in the top 50 with Arionte Ursary, and that's where we both believe he's going. So I think for me, it's that immediate risk versus reward. And for me, I think it swings towards Charles Grant.
Yeah. What I will say is, like, I really do think there is, with Ursary, like, having a guy that big who can move as well as he does laterally moves the needle.
Yeah, he's explosive. Like, he's explosive.
You don't find many 339 wide zone tackles. Like,
and I think, you know, depending on the other thing that I want to bring up with offensive linemen in general, and it's something that even I don't understand because I don't have as vast a knowledge of the position or the position group as much is, depending on what kind of offensive line coach you go to, depending on what they want you to do with your hands, some guys just don't have it with a certain technique. It's very scheme dependent. It's very coach dependent. Some guys don't have it. And then you get them with a different coach who teaches striking a little bit differently, strike technique, strike timing, strike placement, how you are using your hands. And it completely changes the way that they play. And so a guy like Ariante Irisarry, we believe, is not technically refined. You get him with the right coach and it clicks for him, and maybe he ends up being a Pro Bowler because he has that sort of athleticism. So we'll find out. But this is just my thoughts right now. Jonah Jackson. I keep doing that with him.
Both Ohio State alums, so, you know.
Donovan Jackson in round one. Or Jono Cervinia. And see, that's what probably screwed me up too.
Yeah.
In round two. This might be my favorite one.
It's a good one. Both probably guards with, in a pinch, starting potential at tackle as well. Based off of value on my board, I'm going Donovan Jackson here. I'm still a Cervinia believer. And I really
value
am.
On your board. That's interesting.
I think Donovan Jackson's a top 25 player in this class as a tackle. I think his tackle tape in the playoffs is tremendous. I'm going to go with Donovan Jackson here. I think both are going to be really good players, and both you could probably play pretty immediately. Savine, I think you might need to work on some of the maybe the mental aspects of his game, because I do think where a lot of Savine's lapses are is like, one, he's playing with a quarterback who has no idea how to stay in structure or get the ball out on time. So Noah Fifita is just like running around back there. So that's really hard to pass protect for quarterbacks like that. But also I do think Savine lacks a little bit of that mental aspect of like, I should expect a three-step drop, so I need to kick set maybe once before setting vertically and kind of getting set depth-wise. And I think he's just wide kicking everything way too wide and not mirroring. So like, but that's a conversation with the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach and even the quarterback. Like, you know, I'm trying to get the ball out fast. Don't kick wide and give up a huge inside gap for defenders to cross your face. So I do think there's a little bit of lapse there where I don't think Donovan Jackson has. And just his ability to start in a pinch when needed. Also, he's a 4-year starter, and I think he's going to be a day one starter. Like, that's worth a first round pick to me. So, yeah, Donovan Jackson here, round one.
I came up with this one, and it's so hard for me to pick.
It's like, a tough one. It's a good one.
I'm gonna go with my gut here. I'm gonna go with the value on my board relative to one another, and I'm gonna go with Jonas Avinai. And this is strictly at guard. This has nothing to do for me. It has nothing to do with tackle flexibility. Now, if you say that you're going to play Donovan Jackson at tackle, then it changes the conversation just from a pure value perspective, because tackles, even though guards are way more expensive now than they were 3 weeks ago, I still think the value of tackle in the NFL is so high because there just aren't enough of them.
Yeah.
I also don't believe that Jonas Vinai would survive at tackle at the NFL level, maybe at right tackle, certainly not at left tackle. He was not good there. I liked him at guard at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was fine. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm going to stick with what I believe his tape could be at guard as a full-time player there. At right guard specifically. Now, we could have a conversation about if you need a left guard or a right guard, then I'm going to take Donovan Jackson at left guard. But in a vacuum, just as a player, Jonas Avinai in round two over Donovan Jackson in round one for me. Alrighty. The last one on the offensive side of the ball before my co-host takes over the questions. With the last one on offense, we are talking centers here. And we are talking about number 86 on the consensus board, Georgia center, Jared Wilson, in round three, or Texas center, Jake Majors, in round six. I wanted to get Seth McLaughlin in this as well. The problem with that is the injury. I just took him out. I was going to do a this or that with this one. But with the injury, I took McLaughlin out because it's a little bit unfair to him, because I think for the value, especially after the injury, I might just go McLaughlin because I think he's a good player. But the injury just took him out of this conversation for me.
Yeah. Again, this one's really easy for me. I think Jared Wilson round three over Jake Majors round six. And what it comes down to is I'm getting a starter in one end, and I'm not getting a starter in the other end. I don't think Jake Majors is an NFL starter, like, just flat out. And honestly, I think Jared Wilson's probably going to go higher than round three after he tested at the combine like he did. And that's not to say that I think Jared Wilson is a day one starter, because I do think that there might be some play strength stuff he's got to probably get into an NFL room and work with. But the way he moves, man, is the way he can pull and get to the boundary, the way he can climb is undeniable. And so I'm going to go Jared Wilson here. Very easy. And what it comes down to is, like, if you're telling me, I don't care, like, honestly, I don't care about the round. If you're telling me I'm getting a starter versus a non-starter, I'm taking a starter.
And I'm the complete opposite here. I'm going Jake Majors here. I love the entire, and it's so funny because I love the interior offensive line on both of those football teams. There's a lot of congruency. There's a lot of consistency between the two. And I'm going to go with Majors here. I don't really know if either guy is a starter at the NFL level, to be completely honest with you. And when we are talking about that, one of them might be, both of them might be, neither of them might be. But if I have that question at all, and I do, I'm going to go with the guy who I can get later and hope to develop into a low level starter at some point. So I'm going with Jake Majors in round six. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, we got four on this side of the ball here. So first one, I picked two dudes with people assume pretty similar athleticism, and they do have pretty similar body types here. But their values portrayed a little bit differently between the two. So let's do Texas A&M edge rusher. I put top 10. I'm going to move that to top 15. Texas A&M edge rusher Shamar Stewart, top 15, or Oregon pass rusher Jordan Burch in the back end of the second round.
Okay, here we go. I would take Shamar Stewart at number one overall before I take Jordan Burch in round three. I don't really have much else to say about that.
Yeah, that's
we can connect the dots with that one.
Yeah, but like, he came into the combine with top 50 hype.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care. I saw absolutely nothing.
Yep.
And that's just what it is. Like, I don't want to be an a-hole to these players, because at the end of the day, I want all of them to succeed. Like, mm-hmm. just straight up. Unless, like, I know you as a player, or as a person, really, and I just don't like you, and there's a good reason not to like you, which I don't get close enough with these players to really know. So it doesn't really matter to me. It's no skin off my back. I think that there are guys who, when we do this, there's guys I just don't see it with. I mean, Damian Martinez is another guy a lot of people like. I just don't see it with him. It's just the way that it goes in this business. And it's not that I don't like these guys. I just don't think they're great football players. And with Jordan Burch, I just saw nothing. And this isn't just I watched three games of him this year. There has been talk about him for 3 years. I've watched a lot of Jordan Burch tape over my time. Mm-hmm. And I have never once seen it with him.
I'm there too. I mean, I love Shamar Stewart. He's a top 10 player on my board, has been since October. So easy money here. Yeah. Second one.
This is my favorite one.
Oh, it's so good.
This is my favorite one.
And it's so tough because I really love both these players here.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon defensive tackle Derek Harmon round one, or Indiana defensive tackle CJ West late day three or late round three in the comp pick range?
Oh, this is so much fun for me. It's CJ West. I think you're talking about a guy who was playing a little bit out of position and played out of position really well at Indiana. I think you get him in a more penetrating style, not even more penetrating style, but even more of like a gap and a half style instead of just like as a true nose guy. Make him a three tech at the NFL level. And could he play one tech at 350? Absolutely, he could. He's shown at the college level that he can do it. And not just physically, but cognitively as well, because I think that's something that we don't take into account at one technique enough. But I think in that range, you are getting a potential starter. And I think and we've talked about this with Derek Harmon before as well, as good as he was or as productive he was as a pass rusher, it's really the run defense that really stands out for me. Mm-hmm. Like as a one-on-one pass rusher, it's not quite as there with me or for me with him. And so I'm not going to expect him to be a DeForest Buckner type of disruptor at the NFL level. I just think he's going to be a really good player.
I think,
but I also think CJ West is going to be a really good player. And in round three, that value is there.
I think they're both going to play for a decade.
They both very well could. Yeah.
Also, let me know, the Draft on Draft podcast was very early on CJ West.
A big thing for me with Derek Harmon is you're right. I think he's going to stick around. And with that unique, sometimes that unique body style. Mm-hmm. Just works. Puna Ford is 5'9" with 36. Like, it just works. Sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it does. And I think with Derek Harmon, it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the upside is so similar in both these guys. The testing numbers are, I mean, Harmon didn't test, but it's so close, man. I think Derek Harmon deserves to be a first round pick, and I think CJ West deserves to be a day two pick. Man, the value CJ West in the comp pick range, I'm taking that. Because like their skill sets are so similar too. Like they're just. I really wish CJ West would have transferred out of Kent State before year five, to be completely honest, and we could have seen some more stuff from but it is what it is. I love this next one. By the way, we're gonna talk some nickel corners here.
Can I add a third one in just for fun then after we discuss this? Okay,
for sure we can. Jacob Parrish, Kansas State corner / probably NFL nickel round two, or Western Kentucky nickel Upton Stout midday three round end of four early five. I love both these players too, man.
I don't know if we've talked about this enough for this class, but I know it's something that's been brought up here and there. It's a really good nickel class. Mm-hmm. Like the corner class isn't that great. Like the safety class has some really good top end talent, but the nickel corner safety hybrid class is pretty darn good. I think that this position specifically is about as scheme driven as anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can really find value in guys like this in rounds 3, 4, and 5. And I think Upton Stout is a guy that you can, you know, find that value with as a starter. And at the end of the day, that's what this comes down to. Like, I don't think Jacob Parrish is going to be a Pro Bowler. So what's the difference between a slightly better starter in round two than a starter who isn't going to get you killed in round five? Mm-hmm. For me, the value here is with Upton Stout, even though I really like Jacob Parrish, the player.
I think I'm going with you here as well. I love Jacob Parrish. It's so tough. Jacob Parrish just turned 21 too, and Upton Stout's a fifth year senior.
Yeah.
So that I think that plays into this. That's tough. I have a scout who's told me like he wouldn't be shocked if somebody took Jacob Parrish end of round one as well, by the way. But and both of these guys could play outside corner of pitch in a pinch too. Like Mikey Sanders still with the Commanders this year. Like I think both these guys could have a similar. Did you know Upton Stout also almost was supposed to transfer to Michigan to take over Sanders still's spot?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. No.
Mm-hmm. It fell through at the last. Yeah. But I think I'm going to take Stout though, because I think how he slings into run fits from this is so good, dude. At 5'9", whatever he weighs, like he's physical. And at the Senior Bowl, he was bullying dudes at 5'9", like in one-on-ones, he was bullying dudes down the field. Like, I just think he's a really, no pun intended, a stout corner. Like,
yeah,
he's really one of those, physical he's, at that size, dude. And I love that.
He's got some J-Lew to him, Jordan Lewis. And how long has Jordan Lewis played for?
Yeah.
At this point, and Jordan Lewis ran like a 4.55.
So I'm going up to Stout here as well.
I want to quickly add a third player in here.
Okay.
Tulane safety corner hybrid Caleb Ransall. I don't care where we're putting him. That's who I'm throwing in there. And it's mostly for what you said, slinging into run fits. Mm-hmm. That dude played on the edge like 20% of the time for Tulane and was just banging tight ends and banging all offensive tackles in there. I don't love his usage at Tulane because it was like a lot of flat heavy stuff. But he also jumped back into split field looks a lot. And then he went and tested at the combine and has like a 9.96 RAS somehow too. So
yeah.
Give me that because I didn't see that kind of athleticism on tape. Like I thought he was fine, but good lord. Let's do it. Let's get to the last one.
All right. So this one,
can we avoid the allegations?
We're going to go on tape. We're going to go based on tape here. Would you rather have Mike Green in round one or Femi Oladejo in round three?
Oladejo in round three. Oladejo in round three. And for me, it comes down to new player at the position was playing off ball beforehand. The flashes at the Senior Bowl were awesome. For a guy still learning the position, I think when you look at Green and you look at their frames, their relative frames, and I know people talk about the power profile with Mike Green, like they legitimately really like it. I don't see it like that. I think he's a Yannick Ngakoue finesse type of player. And I kind of think Oladejo is going to be that guy too. But the like Odafe Owe type player who I think has a lot of technical growing to do, but is already a good enough athlete to like kind of survive on the outside. Is kind of how I feel about Oladejo. Get him with a good positional coach in the offseason, and I think he could end up being a really solid player on the edge at the NFL level. So for me, again, this is more of a value thing because I do think Mike Green is a better football player right now than Oladejo is. Mm-hmm. But for me, the value is with the upside and the draft position here that we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm taking Femi Oladejo here too as well. Mainly because I think Mike Green is like a top 65-ish player. Like I don't see a top 20 player. I don't see a top 32 player, man. And I know like he's got bend, he's got juice. I get it.
I don't see us missing the power profile personally.
No, I don't either. I guess people are maybe watching like against Coastal Carolina and games like that and saying like,
I didn't see
290 pound offensive tackles, but like watch the ULL game, watch the Ohio State game, like the ULL game, he gets blown off the ball pretty consistently against ULL. Ohio State, I've mentioned it before, their tight end two, Kamersek or whatever his name is, like their blocking tight end is single blocking him on a lot of front side, like running, like run plays. Like you can't sell me that that guy has a power profile. You can't sell me that he has a he's a good run defender right now. And I honestly don't know if he has the frame to become one either. So I think, and again, if you could tell me, yeah, well, if he could be Hassan Reddick and you could, yeah, I'm taking Hassan Reddick in the first round every time. If you can guarantee me that he could have a 12, like consistent 12 sack seasons. So yeah, of course you still take that round one. But no, no, I'm going to take Oladeja round three here.
All righty. I love it. That is it. That is an episode of Daft on Draft, a this or that episode of Daft on Draft. We're going to have to do one more of these before.
They're fun.
They are fun. Maybe we will get the people to give us some this or that on top of the Q&As that we are going to do. And we are going to do a mailbag for tomorrow's episode as well. We will take your questions. We will answer them. And remember, unless Corey has anything to add here, I love you guys. Goodbye.